I then got into a big problem. I went up to the Archivo Nacional, and the director, Gomez del Campillo, and I'll never forget that so-and-so, and me, said I haven't got any permission. Well, now I was mad. I was mad because this is now a matter of over 5 months. And so I asked him, I said, where do I get your permission? Because the embassy said they hadn't got anything back. So he told me over to the Ministry of the Bellas Artes, into there. And I went over there, and I was mad. And I could talk Spanish. And I came in into there and told him my problem. And he took over there on his desk, and he says, yes. He says, here's your application. I've only had it on my desk for 3 months. And they had another one, too, because I told someone else to make the same thing. So I says, but listen, I've only got a weekend here, and I want to see some of these things into there. He says, I'll put this in right away, but wait a minute, he says, here's my card, and he put his initials on his card. Show that, he said, to Campillo, and also hold it if you're going to see Simancas. So I went back to there, and I showed that to Campillo, and he almost straightened up and saluted me into there, then told me that they didn't have anything. But I tried to tell him that the only mention of the guide that I knew of by an American, a shepherd, said that they had it and that he would not make a mistake on a whole section. And he said, well, he makes mistakes. I said, well, he might make some specific mistakes, but not general ones. So finally I convinced him and he brought me out just one legajo. And I'll never forget it. That was the Legajo 3900, which hit right in the heart of my own feet. And I finally had copies made of most of that thing, but I never got to see anything more because Campillo was the boss. And the reason I found out later of why he didn't is because he was engaged at that time in making a calendar of the United States series.
Himself.
And he says that, and he said that when he finishes that, you won't have to come here anymore. Well, with that in mind, I went off to Simancas. Simancas is 3 or 4 miles outside of Valladolid. And I came up into there, and when I got in contact with the jefe, and when I showed him his card, he brought his own private horse and buggy to take me out to there, showed me what little he had, and I did not understand and didn't expect too much into there. So I got one or two little things, and I never have really exhausted the archivo at Simancas, which is a relatively minor matter to me in the overall picture. Madrid and Seville are far more important. For me. Well, then I returned and back to France and came home to California and went back to the university. I was offered a teaching fellowship, but that would take too much time, so I asked Professor Bolton if I couldn't be his reader, which would take less of my time. While I sat down to write my thesis, because I had passed all my exams before, except my German. And I became the laughingstock of the whole seminar because everybody knew that I was spending all my time on learning German to pass the German examination, which I had to do, into there. And so what did I have? I had a German grammar, a German book, a German dictionary, and a notebook. And this time I was not going to be fooled, so I went after the only book that I knew of and that was available in my field, written in German. And at the same time I attended classes in German A. My German instructress, she was a woman at the time, looked at that book and said, I wouldn't try to use that book. That's too difficult for you. but at least I knew something about it. And it just so happened, and I had a girlfriend who was majoring in German. And we worked every time, oh yes, for 5 or 6 months, steady, doing nothing else but that. And Pedro, not being off on a leave of absence, Bolton himself took over the task of assigning me the German test. And Bolton's German, I'm afraid, was rather rusty at the time, too. But he took the book from me, and he says, "Now, Nazatir, open up the book someplace blindfolded." So I opened up the book, and he looked at it. He says, "Oh, wait a minute, better come to the first page of that chapter," which I did. And that was a German account of La Salle, which, if I couldn't tell, translate that, even without one day's German, I think I should have been ashamed of myself, because outside of a couple of grammatical expressions in there, the nomenclature was practically the same, so it was very easy. I think I had an easier time than Bolton did in working over that. Now, with that out of the way, I've then put all my time on writing a thesis. And I started from the beginning of my thesis. And every once in a while, Bolton would come in and say, "Nazatir," he says, "how long are you going to be around here?" I says, "I thought you said, take my time." He says, "Oh, you've been around." So then I would rush up and start really going faster. And he'd come around and say that again. So I told him I'm doing my fastest that I could. Finally, he came into me, and I was taking him in chapter by chapter to him, to turn him into there. And he says, "Well, this is a good place to stop, stop." And I had not even reached the halfway point of my first chapter at the time. I was over 300 pages at the time, though. And so Bolton said, "Yes, I know that this is somewhat of an incomplete job in the overall, but nevertheless, we did do it. We adopted the title of Trade and Diplomacy in the Spanish Illinois." And the breaking point was in 1792, the best breaking point, the one I was supposed to reach would be 1804 with the transfer of Louisiana. But I was already well along, so they accepted my own thesis there at the middle point of 1792. And hence I took my final my thesis was approved. But I had a difficult time, Bolton had a difficult time in bringing together my committee, because two of them, most of the members of my committee, were off campus and off on a sabbatical leave. So he had to bring in outsiders to fill in, which he did. But he brought in several of them, in Chapman, for example, whom I knew very well, and had his instructor come in, and he was the first one really to really work in the Spanish archives, and so he began to ask me questions about that, and that was fine. He brought in, however, the Guthridge in English history, who wanted to know something about literary style, and if I had read any of the major men, in which I got into, but I refused to tell him and to answer the question whether my thesis fitted into the certain rules of literary style. Bolton knew that, so he finally, when he took it over, and I wasn't afraid of him, He says, and asked to tell him exactly what it is. And I told him that my topic was not completed, and I was working on it, and that would be probably polished a little bit more later on. But I didn't have any trouble with that. The question now came about getting a job.
Now, by what time were you finished?
That was in May of 1926. That's when I got my degree.
Excuse me. Okay.
At my graduation, this was the only time that both my parents attended, which I was happy. And after the ceremonies in the mid-afternoon, my father asked me that if I didn't think I deserved some kind of a gift, and I told him yes. And so he said, fine, son, he says, I think you've done a good job. I'd like you to have some more Hebraic training. I don't care for you to practice as a rabbi, but I'd like you to have the training of one, and so therefore my present to you will be 3 years in the seminary in New York. But I told my father that I was in research work here and that I was in an unfinished job, that I was in the midst of it, and I'd prefer not to interrupt my research work or my work of getting teaching that I was being prepared for at the time. And hence he did something that I was not prepared for. He then said, son, he says, I told you and all my children that I would support you until you could each support yourself with the employment. So now you recall that 2 years ago that you, when you got your secondary credential and you had a job in Marin County, and then they offered you your fellowship to Spain, and you took that fellowship to Spain, and I support you. Since that time, I've given you $1,985. I want it back. Well, I was shocked at it, that's true, but I was determined that I would pay it back. Although my father was not a poor man and did not need it in any sense of the word. And I didn't. While I was working on my thesis again, now looking for a job, I was offered the chairmanship of the history department in one of the colleges in Oklahoma. And at the same time, I was offered an instructorship to teach European history at the University of Iowa. Professor Bolton counseled me to take the job at Iowa, even though it was a temporary one, because I believe he thought that would be more in consonance with research work that he was very much interested in all of us anyway.
Now, the chairmanship would have taken up a lot of your time.
Well, I know, but then I would have been boss, and I was a young kid, and it was 10 months. It was in Ada, Oklahoma. And I didn't even answer that, which was a very, very serious mistake in protocol. I didn't even answer them. And I went to Iowa, and there taught four sections of the survey course in European history, which was not in my field at all. And it was taught 16 hours at the time. And Iowa paid me $1,700 a year. The standard price for instructorships at most universities was $1,800. But Iowa paid $1,700. So off I went to Iowa, the University of Iowa, very nicely situated place, nice grouping into there. I aided Professor Root, R-O-O-T, who was the head of it, head of the department in there. I did my work. I taught my classes. I even helped him in his new course that he was developing for him, and took over a section as a teaching fellow for him as well during the time. I was able, however, there to get my first articles ready, first publications, of which the first ones that I got out were the two that appeared in the Mississippi Valley Historical Review on Jacques d'Église, which was a discovery of mine in my work on the Missouri. The only part, instead of doing what most PhDs should do, that is namely of finishing up my own topic, putting it into literary shape, and to publish it as a volume, which should be done. But I immediately saw that it would take me a long time, and hence I decided against that, simply took the most important part out of it, which was the central thesis, central chapters on the Anglo-Spanish frontier in the Mississippi Valley during the American Revolution, which was the greatest contribution of my own thesis, and finally got that published, prepared, but published a little bit later in the Illinois Historical Society Journal of History, into there, and which probably these two articles, one published in 27 and the other in 28, gave me a fairly solid beginning as a scholar, at least. But the University of Iowa had hired me and another young instructor to fill in while they were looking for an experienced Europeanist. And I immediately, at the end of the year, went back to the Bancroft Library and was continuing my own research work. The job markets were rather difficult, and usually they used to help us out, our own faculty members, and most of them did. Most of them helped me get it, first by my job at Iowa and then my later jobs here. But two things that happened, or one or two things happened during that time. One is that I immediately left Iowa for a very good reason, because here I was in Iowa as a good native son of California, bragging about California, and as a youngster on top of it. And then was my first meeting with snow, my life, in there, and was able to find out what that has in it. And I was advised to put on my woolies, which I did when I saw the people scurrying around, and I wanted to know what was wrong. And they said, look at the thermometer, and it was 2 below 0. So I went home, put on my woolies. But I had to go to a dance that Friday night and the next Friday night at the Union. And woolies don't go with the heater there, and so I took them off and never put them on again during the time. But always talking of sunshine and of good weather in California, just at the very end of the year, when they had the Shriners Convention in Los Angeles, and it was in June, early June, And they flashed it on the movies in Iowa City where they were in the rain, and I was always talking about sunshine. I was nearly run out of the city to get home. So I went home, went back to work, and continued my studies in the Bancroft Library. I never got a real good chance at another job because I didn't want to go outside again of my field into it, which I had done, into there. And after 2 months at Berkeley, Bolton came in to me when I was very busy continuing my work on the thesis, on the thesis topic into there. They told me, Nasseter, you go down to San Diego. I said, I'll be glad to. This was early in December, and he says, go with the Christmas break.
Were they advertising for a job opening?
What happened was that Dr. Dufour, who had just gotten, he was an older man, been superintendent of schools for years, lived in Alameda. And he had got his PhD and came down here to teach when he was asked to become the vice president of San Francisco Teachers College at the time. And he lives in Alameda, so he wanted to go. And they asked him, Dr. Leonard, who was the head of the department, who had hired him and was Bolton's man, and I knew him, to there. Bolton says, Nasseter, go down. And so I went. I got here on January the 1st of 1928. That's how I got here. Well, there's a strange thing about this. I had to take over Dr. Dufour's classes, and he had a class in the history of the Americas, which of course I was very, very conversant about, having been a student, a teaching fellow, everything else connected with it in the time. That was all right in my field. And his second course was the history of England, in which field I never had had a formal course in my life. Well, but Dr. Dufour told me where he was at the time in English history, which happened to be in the time of the reign of Elizabeth. So I began to work on my Elizabethan age there for a couple of weeks, and I got enough to start lecturing. And in this general overt survey course, I spent 4 weeks on Elizabeth, which probably should have taken, as I learned later on, about less than a week in the diamond there, in order to be able to get a foundation to be ahead of the class to keep on going. And I worked as I never have.
So these courses at the time were offered over 2 semesters?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I see.
This is your courses in both cases, A and B.
So you picked up at the semester break.
No, it wasn't the semester break. It was in the middle of the first one. We got through in February. This was in the middle of the first semester.
Okay, so...
Although I came officially January 1, 28, I always called myself in 27, because it was the first semester of the 27-28 year.
Okay. Was this called the San Diego Teachers College at the time?
It was called Teachers College at that time.
Right.
It had at that time, I think, 3 years, if not, that's all. 2.5 at the first and 3 years. Both of these courses were given as undergraduate courses, History 5 and History 8. Dr. Leslie gave the History 4, which is the European one. And we had no upper division.
So you and Dr. Leslie made up
and Dr. Leonard.
Three of you made up the history department.
Three of them, history and political science.
Oh, they're combined.
Oh, they're combined, but with Dr. Leonard taking most of the political science.
I imagine the school was very small at the time.
It was. At the time, I've been trying to figure it out. We thought we had about 350 students. All I remember is that we had just about enough men to field 11 men for a football team, but not any substitutes onto it. Every man was a valuable asset during that time, although there were several men on the faculty at the time. President Hardy was a very nice fellow and a very good Scotchman, and treated us in a Scotchman's way, both salary-wise and otherwise. But he was always well-liked, all of us did. He was no great educator, but he was a good administrator in many respects and knew what it was all about. And he had an affinity with me for another reason, in that he had gone to the University of Wisconsin and had courses with Frederick Jackson Turner and on the frontier, and he knew that I was a grand student, not a student, but a grand student. I don't remember I told you about that Bolton had a habit of, every time he had a PhD candidate, he would take a copy of their final public examination and send it to Lester Turner. And all mine, he showed it to me, he says, and put down here, this is a short-lived one, because he never cared too much for younger students, and I was too young for Bolton. All the way through. Bolton was a little older, not an old man when he went through his things, but he always preferred younger men in most cases. Younger men and Texans, although he's a Wisconsinian. And in fairness to everything else, I must admit that it was Pato and Morris and others who didn't care about age, whether it was old or young, who only wanted to have good students. But Bolton recognized, I suppose, that because he wouldn't go out of his way at times for me, as he would for some others. But he did take care. He was the one that put me here. And not only that, not only did I have to work hard, as happened in here, several things occurred while I was here. At the end of the first year, which is in June, wasn't quite a full year, into there, I was a vacancy occurred at Oklahoma State University, and Bolton said that I was first in line, and they asked him for it. You can take it, or you can stay where you are, and Roy Hooley, who was the next one in line, a much older man, but the next to me in there, would take whatever job I would, either this one or that. And I chose this one.
You decided to stay.
I decided to remain.
Now, had you moved down here with your wife?
Or no,
you
no, were, no,
you
I'm
weren't
not
married yet
no,
by this time?
I'm not married. I'm not married.
So you were,
no.
You could move if you felt like
it. Yes, I could move. No, I was single. More than that, I used to have, the lectures were twice a week in each course of mine. Then they were divided up into sections, quiz sections, which we did. And every fourth week, monthly, I always gave a midterm examination, thereby consolidating and excusing the four sections in each one for that time, and they're all going together on the third hour. So, for example, History 8 would be Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 10 o'clock, but they'd only meet on Monday and Wednesday, and then they were split up into four, most of the time with four sections. But on every, that's when I would go up to Los Alamos for the long weekend. I would leave on Wednesday and leave my instructor. I've been used to the honor system at the time, left my very efficient young woman reader in charge, and also Dr. Leslie helped out, supervised it during the time, and so did Leonard once in a while. But I used my time, you see, to go up to Los Alamos, to use the Los Alamos Public Library as my resource, because we had nothing in our library in here or anything of the kind. And I was interested in all of this thing. Now, Hardy used to come up to the office and says, now listen, he says, I'm not going to spank you, but remember, research is not what we're after during the time. He used to counter that by, when he first gave me the file case, it was the last half of the one in the registrar's office, and he came up to my office one day, and he didn't say even hello, he just opened up W. He says, Nastier, he says, when I went to college, we filed whiskey under W. Into the field there. But it's on account of the fact, that was one of the reasons, because